Blog Talk Radio.
Aaron McCready.
Perino.
Welcome to
I'll Tell You What.
Steierwald.
America is bigger and better than its politics.
The hit podcast is now a new show on Fox News Channel.
What?
Politics with personality.
You didn't know that?
I'll tell you what.
Campaign coverage with a twist.
That's a fun week covering an election.
Woof, woof.
Perino and Steierwald. I'll Tell You What. Premiering Sunday.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. The FBI working to determine whether yesterday's bomb blast in New York City's Chelsea neighborhood has ties to international terrorism. The blast left 29 people hurt. Another unexploded pressure cooker bomb found a few blocks away.
Investigators say they have a wealth of forensic evidence since one of the devices did not end up exploding. NYPD bomb techs right now are analyzing that pressure cooker at their Rodman's Neck laboratory, and some other evidence is on its way to the FBI's lab in Quantico, Virginia. We're also told that there is extensive video surveillance footage from each crime scene, but no solid word about a motive yet.
Fox's Peter Ducey in Lower Manhattan, one law enforcement official telling Fox News the explosion in New York and the device that exploded before the start of a road race in New Jersey yesterday appear to be related. No one was hurt in the New Jersey explosion. The United Nations assessing security in the wake of the explosion as the organization prepares to host world leaders arriving for the General Assembly tomorrow. New information on a stabbing attack at a Minnesota mall.
ISIS-related media claimed responsibility for the knife attack in Minnesota this morning. According to counterterrorism officials, the source has been credible in the past. What's unclear is if there was any contact with the Islamic State or if it was just inspired by ISIS. The FBI won't even go that far yet, saying only that this is a possible act of terrorism. The Joint Terrorism Task Force is doing the investigation with St. Cloud Police.
Fox's Dan Springer. Nine people were hurt. The ninth person went to a hospital, was treated and released. Three of the victims remain hospitalized with injuries that aren't considered life-threatening. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton condemning what she called the apparent terrorist attacks in New York, New Jersey, and Minnesota. Republican Donald Trump saying we better get very tough on terrorism. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, then you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Hundreds of witnesses are named in a deadly parade crash that took place in Oklahoma last year.
Prosecutors could call more than 200 witnesses, including victims, first responders, and detectives, to the trial of 26-year-old Adacia Chambers, who's accused of killing four people and injuring dozens more last October when she plowed her car into spectators. At Oklahoma State University's homecoming parade, Chambers, facing four counts of murder and dozens of assault charges, a witness says he approached Chambers' car after the crash and that she told him she was trying to kill herself, that she wanted to be free, though she's pled not guilty and has been locked up since the crash. Her trial is set for January. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
She played Liesl, the eldest Von Trapp daughter in The Sound of Music.
I am 16, going on 17.
Actress Charmaine Carr has died of a rare form of dementia at her home in Los Angeles. Carr later starred in the Stephen Sondheim television musical Evening Primrose. Charmaine Carr was 73. The Emmy Awards are tonight.
Game of Thrones is once again leading with 23 nominations heading into tonight's 68th annual Emmy Awards in Los Angeles. Jimmy Kimmel returns to host the Emmys after hosting in 2012. FX's The People vs. O.J. Simpson and Fargo both came in with 22 nods, while Veep grabbed the top comedy nominations with 17.
Got me called the order right. No!
Great job on the glass.
Blackish and Master of None made the list for the first time in the comedy category, and Mr. Robot and the Americans in the drama category. And one of the highlights of the show will include a tribute to Gary Marshall, who died July 19th. The show begins at 4 Eastern. Michelle Polino, Fox News.
At the box office this weekend, Sully with a second week at number one, earning $22 million. The horror sequel Blair Witch in second with $9.7 million. And Bridget Jones's Baby in third. Lisa Lucera, Fox News Radio.
Aaron McCready.
You have read about him in the Huffington Post. You have seen him quoted in Esquire magazine. The Washington Post writes about him, and you saw him on MSNBC. This is Aaron McCready. Give Aaron a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. Also follow him on Twitter at Aaron McCready or visit him on the web at aaronmccready.com.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. I am Aaron McCready. It is great to have you along with us today. Got a big show for you. We've got a Pearland, Texas town hall style meeting coming up here in just a minute. And before I move on to what else we have to discuss tonight, I did send an email out to the mayor of Pearland and all the city council members. So I'll tell you more about that here in just a second. Later coming up on the program, a good friend of the show, Jack Caravelli, will be on. If you don't know about Jack, he has extensive knowledge of ISIS, Iran, the Middle East, Russia. He actually was in the CIA for about 20, 25 years. Then after that, he went over to the Clinton White House and served under the Clinton administration and also under the George W. Bush administration. And he also has a new book out, which we will be discussing. It's very timely. It's called The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East. That's Jack Caravelli coming up in just a little bit. But tonight, I wanted to discuss a few things with you. And before I do that, I just wanted to send all my sympathies out to the bombings in New Jersey, New York, and also up in Minnesota, where it looks like ISIS has claimed responsibility for that stabbing at the Mall of America in St. Cloud, Minnesota. So, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to all the people involved with that, the families, the victims. It's, you know, a sad state of affairs what we're going through in this country and really the world with the increase in terrorism. We need to be extra vigilant wherever we go. So, you know, my thoughts again and prayers to all those individuals. And luckily, over in St. Cloud, it looks like an off-duty officer shot and killed the person that was doing the stabbing. So ISIS has claimed responsibility for that, and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit too. And you know, open carry permits and laws in the United States. And then, you know, a Texas university had its first known firearm incident since the open carry law was instated here in Texas. So if you want to join the program, give us a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. You can also go on the web at aaronmccready.com. Follow me on Twitter. I respond to all my tweets when you tweet me, at Aaron McCready. That is at Aaron McCready. That's McCready. And Aaron with two A's, not the girl's way of Aaron, not E-R-I-N. People, when I'm out and about and I tell them my name's Aaron, they always write the girl's way. It makes no sense to me at all, but whatever. I guess I'm partial to that name. But anyways, to get on with the Pearland City Council and what's going on with them, is there's been numerous numerous citizens that have brought this to my attention about what is happening at the Parolin Town Hall, in particular with the mayor and with the city council. And for those of you that's been listening to my show for some time, you know that when the show was broadcast back in Georgia, there were many, many people that came to me in response to their children with medical cannabis, which some people call medical marijuana. It has nothing to do with medical marijuana. It's the cannabidiol oil that is produced from marijuana. It has no effects at all like marijuana, but it helps children with seizures. And so these family members came to me in Georgia and wanted me to voice, you know, support for them. And once I looked into the issue, and I never go on just, you know, straight away, you know, siding with somebody. I actually do research on the issue. And the more I did research, the more I found that, you know what, this does make sense for these people. And there's no reason that citizens of Georgia should have to go to, say, Colorado for the betterment of their children. So they came to me, and I, you know, conducted a show in regards to that. It was a very powerful broadcast. You can actually go to AaronMcCready.com and find that. It says medical marijuana is the subject. And listen to that. It's very, very powerful. Actually, you know, unfortunately, one of the family members that was on that show, his child has died since then. So, you know, sympathies out to them. But my whole point in this is, you know, when citizens of a community come to me or I hear about issues that a community is facing, you know, I do have a voice. I do have an open forum. I do have a show. I do have, you know, where you can call in and voice your concerns, and I'm totally open to that. I believe we all need to do what we can for the betterment of our community, the betterment of each other's lives, and whatever we can to support each other. And also holding our elected officials accountable for their actions, their policies, because after all, we did put them in office. They actually, some of them don't like this, and I'm not necessarily talking about the Parolin City Council. I'm talking about just politicians in general. They do not like to be held accountable because many of them, when they get in elected office, think that they are a ruler or a king. And then they forget the reasons that they ran for that office, and they sit on a throne, they feel, and can look down on me and you and a citizenry and the electorate and forget who put them in office. So it's why it's important, and that's why even the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the founders were worried that government would get out of control. Ronald Reagan himself said that government needs to be reined in, that a growing government pretty much squanders, and he didn't say these exact words, but pretty much squanders freedom and liberty. And so it's when town, a city, or a state doesn't hold their leaders accountable, that's when things go awry. And I'll tell you what, Parolin, Texas is a great city. It is a great city. And it's been led by Mayor Tom Reed for years and years and years. And under the mayor's leadership, it went from a very small city now to, I believe, the second largest, second fastest growing city in Texas and one of the fastest growing cities in the nation. So Parolin, Texas has a lot of good things going for it. You know, for those of you who don't know Parolin, Texas, and, you know, we've got a big following in Georgia and Texas, but really all across the nation you're listening to this. Parolin, Texas is the name, what you think, pears. It originally had a lot of pear trees, and that's how it got its name. And then they actually considered it back in its founding almost like the Garden of Eden. I mean, not, you know, not to get religious, not to bring that into things, but, you know, the fruits and how fertile the land was. And then the hurricane of 1900 came about and kind of did its number on that. But the city apparently is growing, and it's a good place to live. The Houston, Texas area in general is a great place. But again, we need to hold our leaders accountable. And 646-200-3400 is the call-in number, 646-200-3400. 3400. Now, before I get to what I want to discuss with the city council, I did send an email out, and let me find this email here. I printed it out so I could share it with you, to all of our councilmen and mayor. And there's not a female on there. I'm sure that will change one day, but there's not a female, so it is all males. And this is the email I sent out. I said, "Gentlemen, due to a tremendous amount of concern by the electorate, the Aaron McCready Show is holding a Parlin, Texas town hall meeting Sunday, September 18th at 8 o'clock p.m. This show will be broadcast live at that time. Calls from concerned citizens will be taken. You all are invited to attend. It is my hope that all sides can be heard and come together on this issue. If you cannot attend, a statement would be appreciated. A press release will be issued about the broadcast to all local and national media. On social media, all citizens of Pearland are invited to take part. Again, this is to bring all sides together for the betterment of our community. Hopefully, we can gain an understanding and move forward with this great and growing city. The show can be heard live at this link," and then there's the link. "If you'd like to participate, please let me know. I will make sure that you all are heard in a respectful manner." Now, I didn't print it out, but I did send another email out before that, and we were originally going to do the show a few days earlier, but some citizens wanted me to take part and voice their concerns and listen in and have an open forum, so we delayed it to today. And, you know, I am fairly new to Texas, so I may botch some of the councilmen's names, and I apologize for that. But I did receive an email back from Tony Carbone, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Again, forgive me. But he sent me an email saying he would love to take part, and he couldn't take part at the original time, but he could take part at a later date. So I sent him an email back and said, "Hey, you know what? We're going to do it at this time." He wanted to take part. He was the only vote against the increase in taxes that we're going to talk about here in a second. Going to be the only vote against it. Since then, I haven't heard from him. The mayor and other council members, this is pretty much what it sounds like, what I heard. Nowhere to be found. They can't respond to a citizen of their own community, much less someone who wants to help the community, better the community, have an open forum. That's very, very disappointing and sad for the government and the leaders of Pearland, Texas. You can go on their website, Pearland TX, you know, for Texas, PearlandTexas.gov, and get all the information you want to about each one of them and, you know, see their history. Also, you can watch the previous city council meetings. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch this last city council meeting, which was a little bit over a week ago. But from my understanding, talking to some of the citizens of Pearland, Texas, some of the members of the council were combative, did not want to let the electorate, the citizens, speak. You know, that's very disappointing when you put people into elected office and the elected officials don't want to let the people that put them into office, the people that they pander to and cater to, when they're trying to win that position, and they won't let them speak. It's really a slap in the face. And there's a proposal that possibly could increase water tax rates by 40-some-odd percent over the next 3 years. Also, yesterday, I got in the mail, it's called Community Impact Newspaper. Community Impact Newspaper, it's the Pearland and Friendswood edition. On the front page, it says growth and improvements, that there's going to be a Pearland Independent School District, $220 million bond on the ballot. And if it approved, it would increase the tax rate by a minimum of 7 cents over the next 5 years. Now, 7 cents over the next 5 years doesn't sound like a whole lot, does it? But if you take into account an average homeowner, and this is on the front page of the Community Impact Newspaper, it looks like Jake Snyder is the one who wrote it. The homeowner of a $200,000 home would pay about $10.21 more per month. Now, that's also based, according to the article, on the $25,000 homestead exemption. So that's another $10.21 a month. You increase the rates of the water, let's just say, water taxes, by 40-some-odd percent over the next few years. Then you have that $10 and, what did I say, $10.21 in addition to the increased tax rate by the city of Pearland. And you're continuing to pay more and more and more and more and more. So, you know, it makes no sense what's going on here. We've got Tom Reed, he's the mayor, Carney, and again, I may, you know, butcher these names. I'm from Georgia, and here I am in Texas, and a citizen of Pearland, Texas, and so I have a, you know, I don't know all their names that well, but I guarantee you, starting tomorrow when I go to the city council meeting, I will know their names. Tony Carbone, Derek Reed, Keith Ordino. And I actually got a quote from him, and I'll say it to you in just a second. Greg Hill. And then we also have, let me flip over my page here because I don't want to, you know, mess anything up here. Trent Perez. Now, get this. I think it came from Ordino. He has a quote, and this is from Christy Nix from yourhoustonnews.com. Christy Nix says, Keith Ordino voiced support for a proposed tax rate. He said, and this is a quote from him too, first off, for those of you who have been following us for the past couple of years, when I ran for re-election last year, I told y'all I wanted to raise tax rates for the reasons I'm about to say, he said. And then the article goes on to say, one concern mentioned was money was being diverted away from funds needed for sidewalks and road repairs. And he says, my argument, since I've looked at this, has been, we have to invest in our infrastructure. If we don't invest in our infrastructure, we are all we're doing is setting up Pearland to fail, Ordino said. I want my kids to move back here. I want my grandkids to be here. If we continue to budget the way we budget and spend the way we spend, I don't think my kids will want to stay here. Well, I'll tell you what, Ordino. And sorry if I'm getting your name wrong, but I'm going to call you Ordino because that's what I think it is. Ordino. I'll tell you something. If you keep on increasing tax rates, no one's want to live here. And then our 108,000, 112,000 citizenry is going to start declining. It's outrageous that you would even say such a thing. Outrageous. We're going to go to our busy phone lines right now, and we've got Richard. I believe he's here from in Pearland, Texas. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm okay. So I was at that council meeting last Monday night, and look, let me start off by saying I'm not surprised that Mr. Carbone was the only one that responded, and the others, all you got was crickets. And I'm going to tell you why. Those guys are sitting up there on their behind their microphones. You cannot have a discourse with them. You can get up there, say what you want to say. Okay, thank you for your remark. We'll take it under advisement. And then they just say whatever they want to say without you being able to ask them a question or anything. So let's talk about Mr. Ordino. He made that comment about sidewalks and streets. And
right.
Then Mr. Reed makes a comment about how they have to take money out of sidewalks and streets and plug budgetary gaps with that money. And that's the reason why our sidewalks and streets aren't being repaired. Well, there was a bond floated. I think they were trying. There was prospectus sent out September 1st, 2015, that showed that they had $37 million invested in CDs, certificates of deposit, and government securities.
Wow.
$19.852 million in certificates of deposit. And then $17.276 million in government securities. But hold on a second. It gets better.
Okay.
Between October of 2015 and July of 2016, they have plunked down another, they have purchased another $7.44 million in securities.
Now, when they do this, can they just do it willy-nilly? Can it go on the ballot? How do they go about doing this without,
They can do it willy-nilly. They can do it willy-nilly. It gets better. That's 12.6% of the budget expended between October of 2015 and July of 2016. Okay?
Okay.
There's an authorization that comes up. I don't know if it's every year or every 2 years. I've been reading through the documents. But they authorize themselves to do this. And it's the mayor, city manager, and the finance director that pick and choose. And according to the paperwork, they're only supposed to use excess funds from the different groups. Well, wait a minute. If you had excess funds from these different groups to invest in securities, and I'm going to get to another point in a second, why didn't you roll it back into this 7-year backlog that they got thrown in our faces in sidewalk and street repairs? I mean, that's $37 million.
See, that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And then they plunked down another $7.44 million between October and July to buy more securities. So guess who services the bond debt? Wells Fargo. If you look at the budget docs, the money that they expend on a monthly basis, debt service payments go to Wells Fargo. Well, guess who they buy their securities from? Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo, I bet. Huh.
Go figure, huh? I wonder how many of these guys have So here's Trent Perez. Trent Perez used to work for the city of Pearland. Here's Mr. Ordineau. He works for the Pearland ISD. Well, who benefits directly? Who benefits directly from our hard-earned tax dollars and these bond initiatives? Let's talk about Mr. Ordineau. I call him the Minister of Energy and Risk for the Pearland ISD. He's the manager of energy. He's the energy and risk manager for Pearland ISD.
And he's been there over 10 years, too, I believe.
Hell yes, he has. So he benefits from these big bond issuances, right? And then he sits there and says, well, we've got all this debt. We've got all this debt to service. Then why run out there and get another $220 million in bond debt? You know? But
right.
If you've got so much, if you read the document, it says, the city pools cash resources of its various funds to facilitate the management of cash. Cash applicable to a particular fund is readily identifiable. The balance in the pooled cash accounts is available to meet current operating requirements. Well, that's not what Mr. Reed said. He says they're coming up short. So they're having to rob Peter to pay Paul. Cash in excess of current requirements is invested in various interest-bearing accounts and securities and disclosed as part of the city's investments. The city pools excess cash of the various individual funds to purchase these investments. These pooled investments are reported in the combined balance sheet as investments in each fund based on each fund's share of the pooled investments. Interest income is allocated to each respective individual fund monthly based on their respective share of investments in pooled investments. Number one, the bank makes money on our money.
Right.
Wells Fargo doesn't do this out of the goodness of their hearts.
Right.
So when I go buy a CD from Wells Fargo, I'm getting a fraction of a percent in interest. The bank's getting a lion's share of it at the end of the day.
Right.
There's a list of approved vendors for these securities, and some of them are local. But why does it all go to Wells Fargo? And I'm telling you, in some months, they plunk down over $1.5 million. So if they have all of this extra money, how come that nice lady that's been waiting for 2 years to get her sidewalk repaired can't get her sidewalk repaired?
Right.
Why do we have a 7-year backlog? Why are we so broke? I don't get it. Why are we in such dire financial straits. We need to live within our means.
Well, during this meeting, what did Tom Reed have to say? I mean, he's been the mayor for umpteen years. I mean, he's been around, forever. What did he have to say about any of this? Because it seems like
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, and you know, you do say that, but if you go on to their website, ParalandTX.gov, you pull up the city council. That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a bunch of thugs on there, the mayor and his councilman. That looks like they're getting ready to do the next hit. I mean, that's the picture they took. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And
the optics of it is terrible.
They sit there. They're condescending. They're hostile to the constituency. And you know what? Somebody's got to send the message to these guys and let them know that they're accountable to the constituency. They represent us. They don't represent Mr. Reed. They don't represent slush funds. I mean, when you have excess, how can you sit up there and talk down to the constituency about how we just don't get it, we don't understand?
Right.
Yet, in the less than 10 months, You put $7.44 million out there like it's discretionary cash, and you just, rather than put it where you say it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, someone needs to start asking these guys the hard questions. And as far as Tom Reed and where he stands on this, he's part of the problem. 30-something years in office, if you ask me, he's the problem. We need some fresh blood in it, Mayor. And apparently the fresh blood in there on city council, it's just not going to cut it. That fresh blood turns out to be more of the same. You got guys, you have people on the Chamber of Commerce. You got Trent Perez. I'm going to represent the east side of Pearland. Oh, he's going to come in here and resent the east side of Pearland. He's not done anything for us except tell us how it's going to be. He's not asked anybody how we want it to be. Not one person up there said, what do you want me to do? What would you like for me to do? We were just told what they wanted to do.
Right. You know,
that's just not how government's supposed to work, right?
No, it's not. And, you know, it amazes me. You know, I'm looking at this, and you say Trent Perez. He was former assistant city engineer. Now he's owner of PRD Land Development Services. So, you know, I need to look into this. And you know, I'm not implying anything here. Maybe you know more than I do. But it would be interesting to see if there's any government contract that's going to PRD Land Development Services. I mean, I don't know where they operate.
Or if any have gone to PRD. Find out if any have ever gone to PRD. Good question.
You know,
I'm not having the time to dig into that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Now, you know, again, I'm not implying anything, or I'm just – talking off the top of my head, but you know, if nothing has, nothing has. But if something has, then you know, there we go. That's a whole different issue that we're looking at there.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But with the way this, you know, what you say, the city council is acting and treating the people that put them in office, it would not surprise me at all, though.
I just, you know, if I'd have had these documents that were shared with me today. Last Monday, I would have brought it up, but I'm going to be there tomorrow, and I'm going to bring this up tomorrow night, because it has to be said. Mr. Reed needs to be called on his little statement about robbing Peter to pay Paul. He's robbing Peter and Paul to pay somebody else. Let's take a step back. You see these big green recycle bins that everybody had plunked down by their houses a couple years ago? Before you moved here, but they're here. And,
well, I've got one too, so.
Yeah, and you pay for it, brother. And did you know at the same time that they put those things out there, they announced that there was going to be a new bid extension to the garbage contract with Waste Management.
Right.
For two more years how many years it was going to be. So our rates went up just with the addition of those large recycle bins that we pay for. And
yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things. There are a lot of things. I found another document today that said for the refinancing of the bond debt, there was going to be a deal where they were going to refinance the bond debt. And they said, because it was such a complex matter that they weren't going to send it out to bid because it was too complex. And I was like, well, wait a minute. If it's so complex, wouldn't you want it to go out to bid? You know, I mean, you would think so, especially when you're talking about the numbers that we're talking about, right? So
right.
Who makes that decision? Who pushes that? You know, I mean, that's the kind of things that are starting to upset me. But when I see that they've got that they're sitting there telling us that you know, they're barely squeaking by to have to bump up our taxes, but then they plunk down again 12.6% of the money spent between October and July towards the purchase of securities. And then as of September 1st, 2015, they had $37 million in CDs and government securities. Something's not quite right. Take that money.
Right.
Put that money to work. That's a good investment, huh? Why don't you invest it in some of that infrastructure that you're harping about, Mr. Ordino? Why don't
right.
you invest it in some of that infrastructure? That's a lot of money.
You know, well, and Ordino, when he said that he increased taxes and that he wants, you know, his children want to stay here, who wants to stay in a city that you're taxed to death? If the school district gets their way, if the city gets their way, who wants to really stay in a city where you're taxed to death and you're making less and less money? And they want to raise taxes when I think the Social Security Administration, they're not going to take more Social Security out because of cost of living issues. So why can't the city of Pearland, have the same thought process? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And this official statement dated August 24, 2015, was for a bond sale, permanent improvement bonds, $8.495 million. And some of those and those funds, proceeds from this bond sale were to go to maintenance of city streets.
Wow. Well, I haven't seen that happen. And hopefully, you know, that's plenty of money also to help someone get their sidewalk fixed. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, Aaron, what these people have done is take advantage of the fact that the 100-something thousand people that live in Pearland. I moved here in 2000. There were 30,000 people here.
Right.
And these people have taken advantage of the fact that everybody here basically works in Houston. So they get up 4 or 5 in the morning, get ready for work, bail out, go to work, come home exhausted, and assume that everything's being taken care of. They pay their taxes like good little sheeple. But I tell you what, I think everybody's tired of that, man. I think people are starting to pay attention to what's going on. And I think this little empire that's been built by Tom Reed and this government of gangsters that they've put together, and I hate to say that, man, but it's starting to look like that. We're just being pushed around. It's horrible. And, you know, people are being told that they don't possess the skills to be able to read a financial report or a budget. You know, one young lady was told, I don't expect you to understand it because you don't have a background in finances.
You know what?
Really?
You know, that's pretty stout coming from the council, because the one person that doesn't want this, that votes against it, Carbone, he is the only one that really has anything to do with finances. He's a CPA. And he wants to vote against it. All these others, they're just in it for themselves, what they can get out of it.
So here's a clear. So that begs the question: what do they gain? If I hear one of them say one more time, well, I have to pay taxes. Well, that's what you have to do. But you don't sit up there and force your agenda down everybody else's throat. Somebody needs to ask that question. Somebody needs to start digging and finding out. What, if any, conflicts exist? Who's driving this bus? Who's setting fiscal strategy going forward? Who's planning this? All these consultants, you know? What's going on? These consultants get these jobs. Those are no bid, too, because I'm sure that's fairly complex as well. you know, because I have been weeding that little ditch paper, that Pearland Journal that winds up in my ditch, and I haven't seen one ad advertising bidding for consultant work.
Right.
So you're right. And we do have one tool in our toolbox, Aaron, that we can utilize, and it's called the recall.
Right.
And that gentleman had stood up last Monday and said that, well, you know, there were, you know, 2,400 people voted in the election that put in Trent Perez, and he got 1,342 of those votes. Well, you know what? We only need one-third of the 2,400 people that voted in that election to sign a recall petition, which would be 800 people. And then we can vote to recall Mr. Perez. And that's one. That's how
right.
we hold people accountable. If they get in there and they don't do what the constituency wants them to do, under the city charter, you have a right to initiate a recall petition and get that person out of office through the same process that put him in there.
Well, if they continue what they're doing, I think that that may very well happen. And I was looking, you know, preparing for the show, I looked at this and I started laughing, but I pulled up the 2016 State of the City presentation from Mayor Tom Reed, and the fourth bullet point he put, and if this isn't talking from both sides of Godfather Tom Reed's mouth, it says, continue good stewardship of tax dollars with careful planning for infrastructure and services to manage the city's rapid growth, quality of life, and small town atmosphere. Give me a break, really? Raising taxes on people, putting money in securities without the citizens' knowledge or permission. That doesn't seem like good stewardship to me. It sounds like just all fluff and talk.
It's all fluff and talk. And here's another one for you. Somebody needs to start digging around this Economic Development Corporation for the city of Pearland that we pay salaries for. Yet, if you go to their website and look them up, they're wheeling and dealing to move companies here, and they're giving them tax breaks. But guess what? When they have a meeting, it's all confidential. You don't know what's going on. You're not allowed to see that. All these negotiations with these businesses. So, by the way, I want to say Mr. Perez was responsible for bringing Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in the Pearland. Or at least he touts that on his bio. Maybe we need to find out under what condition, you know, what sort of carrots were thrown to MHI to get them in town, right?
Right.
When do they have to start paying tax?
It almost sounds like that the Attorney General of Texas maybe needs to look at the city council. I mean, the more you talk, the more frustrated I sit here and get, because I mean, not towards you, but toward the Godfather and his followers there on the city council. I mean, it's just really aggravating. I mean, maybe the Attorney General needs to take a look.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to read one more paragraph for you for this. I found this in one of these bond sales, bid and award. Due to the complexity of the refunding and structuring, the bond sale will be negotiated and not a competitive bid. A negotiated sale is one in which the city selects an underwriting team, blah, 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 and they pick two firms, Coastal Securities and Stifel Nicolaus. I mean, this is some of the, you know, I don't know, man. I've been here 17 years, and, you know, I'm guilty of it, just sitting there just counting on everything to be done right. And then, you know, a couple years ago, I started paying attention to what was going on, my tax bills, and, you know, I've been a good member of the sheeple. I've been paying my taxes and keeping my mouth shut. But you know what? We can't do this anymore. When I see money being wasted and you know, some pretty stout salaries being paid to people that can't seem to manage our city and our budget, something's got to be done. We need some changes, man. We need, you know, we have to live within our means. Why can't the city live within their means? So what? So what if we don't? Like these big, I call them the monoliths. You see these signs going up, one at Dixie Farm and one at Pearland Parkway? Where's that money coming from? Why do we need a big sign to go up? Who's paying for that? I mean, this is some of the stuff that's starting to irk me. If we're doing so badly, why are we buying things? Like, what? You know what? If we go a year without winning an award, so be it. Let's spend the money on what we need to spend it on, not on winning these awards. People are going to move out here as long as the taxes are affordable and the housing is affordable and things are fairly, you know, people won't move out here because, look, they won an award because they have a lot of shrubbery and trees. No, they're moving out here because decent schools, affordable housing, traffic's not so bad. I can get to work in 2 hours, you know, and I've got a mall and a HEB nearby and a Walmart. That's it.
Right.
They're not moving here. They said all that hullabaloo about, we won another award. Who cares?
And you know what? Well, he does care, obviously. I mean, the way he's been acting. And, you know, the development in Pearland is mainly coming from the east side. But the west side of Pearland, the you know, toward Friendswood.
No, the development's on the east. West side. You got to spun up. West side.
I'm sorry, west side. Yeah, west side. And then the east side over here, where I'm located, the east side, you know, closer to Friendswood, I mean, nothing's going on here. So it almost seems like the people who live on the east side are really getting the shaft because they're trying to increase all this for continued development or whatever they're doing over there in the west. It's very frustrating.
We are the cash cows, and those guys on the west side, you know, even though they pay taxes, they got a long way to go before they start paying for all the stuff that Pearland's put in over there, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
I don't know, Aaron. I mean, I think we just all need to be – we need to pay a little bit more attention, start reading, and start asking questions. And you know what? If you speak out of turn in one of these meetings, what are they going to do, ask you to leave, pound a gavel, you know?
Right.
If when somebody sits up there and just tells a bold-faced lie, like what happened last Monday, these guys, these people need to be called out on it on the spot. If you don't, You don't get a chance to do it. You invited these people to come on your show where they had a perfect opportunity to say how they felt. No, they may have had to answer to the constituency. So I invite the people of Pearland to please challenge the council and Mayor Reed. If you see them out and about, stop them. Ask them questions about what's going on. Ask them why they're doing what they're doing. I got a feeling that they'll probably be trying to avoid that. They'll be shopping late at night, early in the morning, you know. So,
well, it's good.
Well, Aaron, thanks for taking my call.
Well, no, thank you for coming on, and maybe I'll see you tomorrow night at the meeting. And I think it takes people like you to, you know, to pay attention and get the word out there and to make changes. And I definitely think, you know, it's going in the right direction and holding these folks accountable. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you. Bye.
That was Richard. He's calling from Pearland, Texas. And, you know, it is very frustrating when you invite the leaders of the government and you even say you're not trying to set them up. You're not trying to make a big rigmarole. Yeah, I read the email I sent to you. I said, again, this is to bring all sides together for the betterment of our community. Hopefully we can gain an understanding and move forward with this great and growing city. And then the second to last sentence that I sent in this email, I will make sure that you are heard in a respectful manner. I look forward to hearing from all of you. Aaron McCready. You know, and I'm sure they're listening to this, but I just want you to hear one thing loud and clear from me to the city council. If you don't hear anything I say, hear this. Councilman and Mayor, you report to the people of Pearland. The people of Pearland do not report to you. We control what happens in the city. We control your destiny. We control your political future. If you do not represent us well, in the matter that we want to be represented and let our will be done, you will no longer sit in those chairs, banging those gavels, telling people they don't understand. No, you are the ones that don't understand how government works, how government functions for, of, and by the people. Mayor Tom Reed, you better get this city under control, and you better do it quick. You have no one to blame for the city's problems but yourself. You've been the mayor for umpteen years, and look what's happened. You're raising taxes on citizens. Citizens will no longer want to be here if their taxes continue to be raised. Water taxes up over 40% in the next 3 years. Yeah, you lowered some property taxes, but of course everybody knows that year in year it appreciates, and then you'll still have to pay more. So that's trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. Tom Reed, if you don't shape up, you will not be reelected. It would be a shame not to be reelected after so many years. Retire or face losing. I'll tell you that right now. Your term expires in 17. Be ready. It's very frustrating. Let me go over real quick the history and the job responsibilities that they used to have, or they still do have, in their lives outside of City Hall. Tom Reed, I believe he's retired. He worked for Johnson Space Center from 1965 to 1997. He supervised and managed complex projects with sizable staffs and tight budgets on the Gemini, Apollo, Apollo, Soyuz, Skylab, and Space Shuttle programs, and spent the last 10 years as Johnson Space Center in the Space Shuttle Program Office. You should be able to read a budget, Tom Reed, and let people know that, hey, this is where your money's going. This is what we want to do with it. Come on, you guys aren't dumb people up there. Tony Carbone, he is a CPA. He's managing partner at Harrington Carbone at Allison. Derek Reed, managing partner at Reed, attorneys and counselors at law. He's also a former Harris County Assistant District Attorney. He is also licensed to practice for the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Quickly, before we run out of time, Keith Ordineau, Energy and Risk Manager for the Pearland Independent School District for more than 10 years. Going on, Greg Hill, we haven't really talked much about him. He's a former high school and Spanish teacher, former United States Border Patrol agent. That's Greg Hill. And then we've talked about him, Trent Perez, licensed professional engineer. And he's a former assistant city engineer, and he is owner of PRD Land Development Services. So we may have to look into that company and see if they have any business or had any business dealings with the city, and we'll see what's going on and happening. But it's really shameful what's going on. And I'm going to tell you one thing. If you guys do not shape up there on city council, Tom Reed and others, I will make sure that I take every effort of this show, every opportunity to make sure you are not reelected. I've done it in Georgia, and I'll do it in Texas. Try me. We'll be right back after this break.
Aaron McCready.
Perino.
Welcome to I'll Tell You What.
Steierwald.
America is bigger and better than its politics.
The hit podcast is now a new show on Fox News Channel.
What?
Politics with personality.
You didn't know that?
I'll tell you what.
Campaign coverage with a twist.
That was a fun week covering an election.
Woof, woof.
Perino and Steierwald. I'll Tell You What. Premiering Sunday.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lissera. New York City police say they plan to blow up the second device found blocks from an explosion last night in the Chelsea neighborhood that hurt 29 people. That second bomb described as a pressure cooker with wires and a cell phone attached. And one police source telling Fox News a blast that happened yesterday morning in New Jersey, where no one was hurt, may be connected to the New York City incident.
There has already been a threat of more bombings by somebody who placed a very suspicious 911 call here in New York minutes after the first explosion. We first heard about this call from law enforcement sources last night.
Fox's Peter Ducey, the Somali father of the man who stabbed nine people at a shopping mall in central Minnesota, identifying his son, a 22-year-old college student, as the suspect. Aman Adan telling the Star Tribune Dahir Adan died at the Crossroads Center Mall after he was shot by an off-duty police officer.
This is being called a potential act of terrorism, and they have impounded the suspect's car and searched two apartments connected to him. The attack happened around 8 o'clock at the shopping mall in St. Cloud, Minnesota, about an hour outside of Minneapolis. Witnesses say a man dressed as a private security guard took a knife and stabbed people, as many people as he could. He managed to injure nine people, seven men and two women, before an off-duty officer shot and killed him. That officer being called a hero tonight because he took down the suspect as he was being lunged at three times.
Fox's Dan Springer. Ahmed Adan telling the newspaper he had no suspicion his son was involved in terrorist activity. ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. The Emmy Awards just getting underway.
Game of Thrones is once again leading with 23 nominations heading into tonight's 68th annual Emmy Awards in Los Angeles. Jimmy Kimmel returns to host the Emmys after hosting in 2012. FX's The People vs. O.J. Simpson and Fargo both came in with 22 nods.
Fox's Michelle Foligno, Fox News Radio. Darren Ballard.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Cool.
Woohoo, Jashkin. I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like, consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
A new set of presidential polls are out.
With 51 days until Election Day, the Real Clear Politics average of polls has Trump and Clinton dead even at 44%. But despite Trump's recent surge in the polls, there's still some underlying voter attitudes that tend to favor Clinton. According to Fox News polls released just this morning, 61% of the likely voters polled say that Clinton is qualified to be president, while only 45% said Trump is qualified. And on the issue of temperament, 59% of likely voters say Clinton has the right temperament to serve effectively as commander-in-chief, while only 38% said the same of Trump. In Washington, Kristen Fisher, Fox News.
The markets may be jittery tomorrow after the explosions in New York and New Jersey.
We are on terrorism watch now after the explosion in New York City as well as in New Jersey and in Minnesota. All eyes pointing to the FBI right now as they are investigating the so-called forensics. We spoke with former Assistant FBI Director Jim Kallstrom this weekend on Sunday Morning Futures. He believes we will know who placed those bombs in very short order because of the FBI's work. As we continue to be on alert, it is UN General Assembly week, so a number of high-profile heads of state are in New York just as this has occurred.
It's terrorism. Of course, it's intentional. We just don't know who did it yet.
Also this week, we'll be getting a lot of information on housing. We've got the September Housing Index out. I'm Maria Bartiromo, Fox News. Have a great week.
Toxic algae has shown up in more than 40 state lakes and waterways from Los Angeles to Northern California, the highest count in California's history.
Do you have the time?
Green Day postponing the first three dates of their upcoming tour and canceled the fourth due to illness. The concerts were scheduled in St. Louis, Chicago, and Detroit, a fourth in Toronto being canceled. The band saying that tickets will be refunded. Lisa Lissera, Fox News Radio.
The future is in peril. What we need now is a shining hope. Bringing the nation back. One voter at a time. This is Aaron McCready.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Aaron McCready. Thanks for staying with us. And if you're just joining us, welcome to the big show. My thanks to everyone in Parlin, Texas that just took part and listened in on the Parlin, Texas town hall trying to hold our elected leaders accountable for increased taxes and oversight. So thanks to them. Joining me now, and I'm very glad to have him back on the show, and my public apologies to Jack Caravelli. We tried to get him on the show before. We've had internet problems, server crashes, you name it, and lost emails, and no Hillary Clinton jokes, but lost emails. So I am very glad to have Jack back on the program. He's got a new book out, and for those of you who, most of you do, I'm sure, but who don't know about Jack Caravelli, he spent many years in the CIA, then worked in the White House, and he actually has a new book out. It's called, and it's very timely, by the way, The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East. Jack Caravelli, welcome back to the program.
Aaron, great to be with you, and no public apologies necessary. Good things are worth waiting for.
Oh, well, you're too kind. You were way too kind, but... You know, you've got this new book out, and I have read it, and it's a really good read, actually, and it really opens up your eyes. And one of the chapters that's in the book, is the fall of Iraq and the rise of ISIS. Can you, without really, you know, telling, you know, what your book is, so our listeners can go get the book, but give us a little bit of peek what you mean by that.
Well, you know, what I've tried to do in the book, Aaron, and thanks for the question, is really draw a line between decisions made, particularly in 2009 when, in 2011, when Barack Obama took the United States military out of Iraq. We had hemorrhaged and committed, as you know, thousands of lives of great Americans, over $1 trillion of budget, our money. To stabilize Iraq, and we had. And the long-term commitment of U.S. forces would have been critical to stabilizing the region and to sort of solidify, you know, what we had accomplished. Obama decided to go in a different direction. We did not put much emphasis into negotiating what is called a status of forces agreement, which essentially means that U.S. forces in any country can remain there at the invitation of the host government, carry out their duties, and not be held legally accountable in local laws. Obama really waffled on that. The Americans had to pull out. That power vacuum, to make it really simple, that power vacuum and the resentment toward the West was filled. The Iraqi government was weak, and that power vacuum was filled by what we now call ISIS or ISIL, or if you want to use the Arabic word, Daesh, which is the Islamic State. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, one thing, you know, you bring up ISIL, the word ISIL, too. And Obama, he mentions ISIL in his speeches. You refer to it as ISIS. I say ISIS. The majority of people, I think, says ISIS. Is there really a difference between ISIS or ISIL, or is it just the same group of people, just you know, spoken in a different way?
It's the same group, Aaron.
Okay.
And even the third one is what I mentioned, Daesh, which is sort of an Arabic acronym for it, which they find offensive. But for me, I ISIS works, and I think you're right. The common denominator is mostly the usage is ISIS.
Gotcha. You know, ISIS claimed responsibility for an attack at the Mall of America. And,
yep.
you know, I'm sure we have many, many more cells here in the United States. What is it going to take for us to be able to defeat them? Or is it a situation that, you know, they're here, it's almost like a cancer spreading? I mean, what do we need to do? Is it too late for us to save ourselves, or have they infiltrated us so much and are just under the radar that, you know, it's just a matter of time before we're in for a whole lot of trouble?
Well, you know, you've raised, Aaron, I think, the critical question, and I think that's really why I tried to write the book, The Age of Hatred. What I wanted to do in the book was draw this line between the, you know, a series of tragic events in the Middle East, some of which were our doing, bad policy, and some of which were not, but also show how it's extended, you know, not only to America. The tragic attack in Minnesota, just the latest example. We, of course, have had incidents in Orlando and in San Bernardino, California, and that just points to the, you know, the question you raised that, you know, we are still in the midst of what certainly they see as war against America. Whether Barack Obama sees it or not is almost irrelevant because, as you said, there is certainly widespread potential still, as we've seen in Minnesota, for more violence against our citizens at home. We've also seen, you know, in 2015 and 16, you know, tragic events and massive attacks in Europe, in Brussels, in Paris twice, in Nice, France. So the West as a whole is under siege. Now, we've got great law enforcement and intelligence, you know, experts who dedicate themselves and do, you know, every day a terrific job and probably score more victories than we'll ever know. But having said that, the fact of the matter is, you know, the policies of this administration have been weak. And to answer your question more specifically, in my view, and I try to address this in more detail in the book, you know, what we need to do is take away the hope in the Middle East of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. And by that, I mean to crush them as hard and fast as we can militarily. And we've dithered and wasted a lot of time, but really make it clear that we give no quarter to those that would wish, you know, or try to inflict harm on us, whether it's in Europe or the United States. This is a war, and if you don't treat it as a war, you know, these are the sad results you're going to get. At the same time, I think we need to look very hard. The Obama policy that Clinton seems to want to double down on to bring migrants from Syria, Iraq, into the country, I think borders on reckless madness because in many cases, the individuals coming in, and we're accepting, I think, about 10,000 this year, they'll be settled. Most of them will be peace-loving, et cetera. But, and the FBI has said this very publicly, Aaron, that, you know, there is no way we will ever be able to fully vet every person coming into this country as a refugee or as a migrant. They're going to scatter around the country. That's fine. But not only may or they may not have radical or violent tendencies when they come, but the other thing, and this is not talked about very much by Obama for obvious reasons. It's not even talked about much by the FBI, but what we see and need to acknowledge is those who come from Iraq and Syria, if they don't assimilate, you know, for years to come, they will be at least potential targets for recruitment down the road. So it's not like someone's going to come to America, say, in November or December of this year, you know, settle in the Midwest, and if they're not radicalized, then, you know, it'll be fine. The fact of the matter is, you know, as we allow migrants in, they will, for the long term, certainly, and ISIS has been very good at this, be recruitment targets. So we have a short-term problem. We've got a long-term problem here at home, despite the best efforts of our law enforcement people. And until we start taking this more seriously than this administration has done, you know, we're going to have, sadly, I believe, more of the kind of attacks we've seen in Orlando, in San Bernardino, in Minnesota. That's not a scare statement, but sadly, again, I think it's a statement of fact.
Well, you know, you mentioned the refugees coming over, and you know, certainly there's going to be people that, you know, want to come over here and make their lives successful and better their lives. But, you know, they speak so much of this group when they bring them over here that they're being vetted and, you know, everything will be okay. But I believe it was our last program that you were on. You said that pretty much, the people that are vetting them in the CIA or whatever organization have you, that it's really the people that are doing the grunt work, the people that's just joined the agency. And so that they may not know the triggers, really what to look for. It's the newbies, so to speak.
Well, that's a great point, Aaron. The fact of the matter is you're right. You know, good and dedicated is not always the same as experienced and savvy. These are very complex problems. But, you know, even as the FBI has said publicly, even if you had the very best of our people, you're only as good as the databases on individuals you can access. And, you know, in the case of, you know, certainly those coming from Syria and Iraq who have probably been, you know, very low profile for some legitimate reasons and perhaps some that aren't, it's going to be very difficult to get background information on these people. I mean, and, you know, we live in as you certainly know, a world of Google and searches and lots of stuff that's publicly available. You know, if you're a United States citizen and where you live or bank records, et cetera, if people have your name. But, you know, it's just not the case. The fact of the matter is it'll be very difficult, if not impossible, for our law enforcement, very good people, to really do the kind of deep digging, you know, that gives you either real confidence that the people you're allowing into the country, are dedicated to, you know, becoming, you know, American citizens and assimilating and learning our values, which I think is a requirement, should be a requirement for anyone, wherever they come from. If you don't want to be here, you know, let these people go to Russia or China, see how they're greeted at the door. But beyond that, also obviously, proper vetting allows us to identify individuals with proclivities to undertake violence against our citizens. You know, we live in a world where, you know, everyone wants to assert rights, and the madness of Germany has been asserting that, you know, 1 million migrants have the right to come into Germany. That's nonsense. The first duty of an elected politician, whether it's in Germany or the United States, the tragedies in France, are to protect their citizens. And I think where Donald Trump has really scored valid major points is simply that at least this administration and Barack Obama's would-be successor, Hillary Clinton, clearly think that the rights of individuals coming into this country, you know, overtake or are more important than the responsibilities, first of our government and then those individuals, to settle in America peacefully. So I have great concern and disagreement, you know, with the Democratic Party in the way it wants to sort of throw open the doors. You know, I'd be more content and confident if I thought that, you know, the administration or Hillary Clinton down the road had a real plan to effectively vet these people, to effectively get them settled, and effectively insist that, you know, the privilege of living in America, if you're coming from outside our borders, is simply that. You don't have the right to be here except the rights that we as citizens and the government give to these individuals. So, you know, what I've tried to say in the age of hatred is, you know, the problems of the Middle East are now, the problems of Europe and the problems of the United States. And without those strong policies that you were referencing earlier, that problem's not going to go away. It's going to be with us for years, and it's going to bedevil us for quite some time.
Well, you know, you mentioned Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and if either one of them win, you know, one will be the president, but if either wins, what will they need to do to not only vet the people that are coming in to make sure we stay safe, but the people that are here already that wish us harm, how will they keep us safe? What do they need to do different than the Obama administration?
Well, you know, Aaron, it's an incredibly important question. Thank you. I think at least a couple things. Whoever's elected, in my view, answer number one, should go to the FBI, should go to the CIA, and talk about resources and say, look, my first duty as president is to protect the nation. What do you guys, you've got a lot of budget, you've got a lot of great people, but are you lacking anything in personnel, in resources, in the ability to legally monitor individuals who are in the country? You know, that would be number one. Number two, I would go to the U.S. military. Again, an enormous amount of capability and dedication that Barack Obama has basically tied their hands. I would say to them, look, it is my goal in the next 6 months to destroy militarily ISIS in the Middle East. Number one, can we do it? Number two, how do we have to do it? Number three, do we have the, you know, the resources and the wherewithal, you know, to take that on? So I think there's a series of, look, we're a mature, important nation. We have resources. We have institutions. The key for, you know, certainly Donald Trump and even Hillary Clinton would be to untie their hands, see what they recommend, and do it within the context of the U.S. Constitution. But, you know, when the safety and security of our public is demonstrably real, you know, we have every right to expect that whoever we elect in November, you know, will be prepared to take those strong actions. I talk a little bit about this more in the book, but prepared to take those actions, you know, that will meaningfully, you know, at least mitigate the domestic and international threats that we face.
Well, those actions that you talk about in the book, do you think, and you know, they're currently both, and maybe Hillary Clinton, just because she was Secretary of State, you know, prior, may know a little bit more as far as the inner workings and what goes on and some of the top secret type briefings. But do you think Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton at this point really grasp what they will need to do as a candidate, getting the briefings that they're getting from the FBI and CIA?
Well, Aaron, as you say, Hillary Clinton certainly has the, let's call it the tactical advantage, that, you know, she has been around these issues for years and certainly, you know, has, you know, a good understanding of them. You know, my question is her judgment and how she interprets the information she has. In the case of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and again, I spent 4 years working on the White House National Security Council on Russia and Middle East issues, you know, it is clear to me that it is almost impossible to really be prepared, you know, across the board for the job as president, whether it's Trump or Clinton. And that's not a criticism or an insult in any sense. There is nothing that really allows you to understand until that first day when you're sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office and somebody walks in and says, you know, Mr. President, you know, there's a crisis, or we've got a decision to make, or, you know, we've got a summit coming up with the Russians or the Chinese. You know, how do you want to play it? It's endless. The president rarely gets good news, and the president almost always, the news he gets, you know, are the hard issues, the tough things, because, you know, as people like me on senior staff, you know, that handled a lot of the, you know, the day-to-day issues and challenges and took on, you know, I hope some important issues, But at the end of the day, it is, you know, the man that we elect, the elected leader, who has to make the really tough calls. And again, there is, you know, there's no school or preparation or training that really, you know, allows you to understand, you know, what, you know, what comes at you sort of morning, noon, and night, you know, for at least 4 years when you're the, you know, the occupant of the Oval Office.
You know, I think John F. Kennedy said it, and I'm paraphrasing, that, you know, the president has to deal with the toughest issues, because if it could have been settled at a lower level, it would have been. He said something to that effect, and that certainly is true with what you're saying. And, you know, in your book, though, The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East, the New Middle East. Now, you know, I remember back when Bush Sr. was president, and he formed a coalition in the Middle East with Iraq, in regards to Iraq. The New Middle East, when it comes to ISIS, are they more of a help or are they more of a hindrance?
Well, you really touched on something, Aaron, I think is awfully important. And what you described about President Bush the elder, you know, is quite accurate. One of the things I've tried to talk about in the book, and, you know, is the Obama administration sort of walking away in many senses for the, you know, in terms of the relationships and alliances, you know, that America formed over decades of cooperation, you know, in the Middle East. And that is tragic, and that is something that is often overlooked. What is happening in the Middle East, new relationships are forming. The United States is as distant from Israel as it has been in decades and decades. That's tragic. Whether one likes Israel or not, Israel has been an essential democratic nation in the region. Barack Obama has a terrible relationship with Netanyahu. That's number one. But, you know, that's one of the changes. Number two has been this incredible, you asked about ISIS, religious war, Sunni and Shiites, that's really gone on every day in the Middle East. The ISIS is sort of a Sunni power. They are supported by some other Sunni powers, if you will, financing some emotional support. What we've seen, number three, has been the rise of Iran. You and I have talked about Iran, I recall, at some length. Iran is more ascendant after last year's nuclear deal and the billions of dollars it's receiving because it signed the deal. It is still a major supporter not only of terrorism, but it's also a supporter of the butcher in Syria, Bashar Assad, who, you know, has run the country into the ground. You know, that's another change. One of the interesting changes, number four, has been some of the more moderate Arab states with Israel. You know, what you and I years ago would have thought would have been impossible, really in a very quiet, subtle way, is taking place. The Israelis and the Saudis have probably better relations than they've had in 50 years, and that's not an overstatement. The same is true with the Israelis and the Egyptians. Now, there are things in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Israel we may or may not agree with, but the fact of the matter is the political vacuum created by Barack Obama walking away from the Middle East in many ways really has sort of the ripples in the pond effect has created these new dynamics, these new relationships that are transforming the region, and that is the incredibly complex but really important part story that I wanted to tell, you know, in the Age of Hatred. So, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, it's like watching a duck. You don't see all the effort that's gone into the duck moving across a pond. But the Middle East is transforming itself a lot. And, you know, I will add the final thought on this, that, you know, U.S. involvement, U.S. engagement in the Middle East, although we again, historically, have had good friends, you know, we don't do these things primarily because we love the Saudis or love the Egyptians or even love the Israelis. We do these things because we recognize as a nation that the stability of the region is in our political and economic interests. And, you know, if we begin from that starting point, then you can begin to form policies that make sense. Obama, you know, never believed that the Middle East was worth fighting for and trying to stabilize. And what we're seeing, Aaron, and your questions really touched on this, you know, has been the loss of face, the loss of respect, the loss of confidence in the Middle East among both Arabs and Israelis. And, you know, if we do not reverse that, I assure you we will pay the price not only in a policy sense, but also in our own backyards of economic stability and even our security. You know, as we've seen, we are a nation that has real vulnerabilities.
And one final question before we go, but, you know, you mentioned Iran. And a few months ago, the United States made some payments over to Iran, and then there was a prisoner release. In my opinion, it was, you know, that it is not what the administration is making it to be. And according to CNN, after we delivered $400 million, we made two additional cash payments of $1.3 billion.
Yes.
What is going on with the administration giving this to Iran? I mean, it makes absolutely zero sense to me why we would give a country such as Iran additional monies. It's just, you know, we speak of Israel. It's just going to be to their detriment, other nations around, and even possibly to our detriment. I mean, why would we do such a thing?
Well, it's a great question. I guess a couple quick thoughts come to mind. Number one, Aaron, and maybe this sounds cynical to your many listeners, but, you know, after spending years at the CIA and then 4 years at the White House, I will tell you, watching our own government, Republican and Democrats, as well as governments around the world, governments lie. You know, they lie to their people, they lie to each other. So I think the art form of the Obama administration has been to lie to the American public in really almost unprecedented ways. Number two, the administration did not want it to appear that we were paying bribe money. Again, the big lie is we were, you know, for the release of American hostages, the big lie was de facto we were paying bribe money. The third thought that comes to mind, you know, those huge bundles of cash you mentioned, the third thought that comes to mind on this, Aaron, is this administration acts like the things it does don't have consequences, or it's okay, or because Barack Obama thinks it's a good idea that, you know, somehow the rest of the world will stand up and agree and salute. You know, it's nonsense. We have hemorrhaged our standing, our credibility, our respect around the world. It has real tangible consequences. And again, you know, the question you asked about the administration's payment of, you know, hush money to Iran is sickening to me. I'm thrilled we got the prisoners back. Had we been better negotiators and less, you know, and not quite so weak, we probably could have done so anyway. But I think history will judge poorly the Obama record on much of his foreign policy. We haven't even talked about Russia or China, but in the Middle East, we have lost a lot in the past 8 years, and whoever takes the White House in January after the November elections is going to have a lot of patching up to do.
Well, since it's obvious, well, obvious to me, and it sounds like obvious to you, that the United States now under the Obama administration has given ransom money, when there's a new president elected, and, of course, we know Obama's a lame duck now, do you think more governments will try to do the same thing before a new president takes office? Are we just the final months of the Obama administration? Are we just in for something that we've never seen before? And will other nations expect for us to be a cash cow for them, do you think?
Well, you know, I hope not. We don't know for a fact. I guess the good news is the clock's running out on Obama. I think longer term, Aaron, nations like the Chinese, China, Russia, have taken the measure of Obama and certainly see him as a weak need. The takeover of Crimea in 2014, China's assertion of vast control over the South China Sea, are all reflection, in my judgment, in part of the weaknesses they perceive in Washington. You know, do I think we'll necessarily have a crisis? Not necessarily, but I hasten to add, I would not at all be surprised if a political crisis was stirred up by the Russians, by the Chinese, or both at the end of the administration, knowing it is almost certainly not going to retaliate in any kind of forceful or tangible way, and just let the days ride out and see who comes in the office and what their policies are. So, you know, if we're lucky, we'll skate by. But, you know, we've put ourselves, by being weak for 8 years, weaker than we've been around the world since the end of World War II, we've put ourselves in a position where the great question you asked is something we can't ignore, and hopefully somebody somewhere is burning the midnight oil trying to think about it. But we're in difficult times, and those challenges of global disorder really are something I wanted to capture in the book.
Well, you did a great job in the book. Again, it's for our listeners, The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East. And everyone needs to go on Amazon and grab a copy. It is a fascinating read. It really gives you a new appreciation and an insight on some of the challenges that we face. And Jack Caravelli, you've been a great friend of the show, and thank you so much for coming on, and I look forward to having you back soon.
All right, it's been a great pleasure. You run a great show. I hope your audience appreciates your efforts, and you know, it's an honor and privilege to be with you, and I hope some of our listeners will find value in the book.
I'm sure they will. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Aaron, all the best.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jack Caravelli, a wealth of knowledge on the Middle East, ISIS. I mean, it's just some of the things that he says just will terrify you. But my many thanks to him. Again, the book is The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East. Make sure you grab a copy. You can get it over at Amazon. But again, just to summarize the show real quick for you, we kind of took issue a little bit with the Pearland City Council and the mayor, but in no way does that relay my affinity and appreciation for the city of Pearland and what great people are in the city. The people of Pearland just need to really stand up, hold the government accountable. No closed-door sessions. That's actually illegal in Tennessee, where I lived before. And just be open. The people put you in office. We expect much more, better standards for our leaders. Again, my thanks to Jack Caravelli, all the listeners. We'll be back next week, and make sure you tune in. Again, get Jack's book, The Age of Hatred, ISIS, Iran, and the New Middle East. Until next time.